Welcome to episode 98 of the Sound Off with the Solid Monster here on SCScoops.com. It is Saturday, January 30th, 2010. It is Royal Rumble weekend, Strike Force weekend. A lot of shows, a lot of things going on. Bret Hart returning to Raw this Monday night. We'll get to all that. I want to start things off here. Apologizing, there was no podcast last week. Had some work-related obligations, and of course that pays the bills, and so that gets preferential treatment over the Sound Off. Hear that, Webmaster Mike? Speaking of Webmaster Mike, want to lead things off here by just giving him a shout-out and giving SCScoops.com and Fight Scoops, the sister site for SCScoops, big shout-out. I posted a link on my Twitter page this past week. Webmaster Mike was down in Florida, where he usually... It's like Ted DiBiase, you know, the Million Dollar Man, when he would come out years ago and Howard Finkel would announce if it was in the summertime, his summer residence, and if it was in the winter, his winter residence. That's kind of like Webmaster Mike, you know, he's got his residence now for most of the year down in sunny Florida, and whenever he feels like meandering on up here to the Northeast to hang out with the common folk, he comes back to New York. He happens to be down in Florida, and he attended the media... media festivities for the Strike Force event, which of course is taking place tonight and will be airing on Showtime. And he spoke exclusively with former WWE superstar, TNA superstar, and a new Strike Force star, Bobby Lashley. And asked Lashley a couple of questions face to face. Really cool stuff, and certainly a big boon for the website. If you haven't already checked it out, the interview's up on YouTube. Go to Fight Scoops. There's a link to it there. So kudos on getting the interview with Lashley. I think he also spoke with Herschel Walker, former NFL star who was making his Strike Force debut tonight. Herschel is fighting a fighter by the name of Greg Nagy, who I am not familiar with. Lashley is stepping in there against Wes Sims, who apparently has the nickname the Barber Beefcake, which I think is hilarious. Should be an easy win for Lashley. I mean, in MMA, you never really know. Anybody can have a lucky night, but I think the expectation there, obviously, Lashley is being groomed for bigger things in Strikeforce. This is his first Strikeforce fight, and it would not be good for Lashley or Walker to go in there and lose tonight, but I guess we shall see. So if you're an MMA fan, if you're a Bobby Lashley fan, check out the Strikeforce show tonight, and again, check out the exclusive Fight Scoops interview with Lashley. It's really cool stuff. Now, as for Sunday night, obviously, the big event of the weekend, if you're a wrestling fan, is the WWE 23rd Annual Royal Rumble, emanating from Atlanta. I could be completely wrong on that. I have Atlanta on the brain. I'll get to why in a minute, some breaking news here. But Royal Rumble coming up, and I will say that for the first time since WrestleMania 25, Solid Monster will be shelling out 50-some-odd dollars, I think now the price tag for the standard feed, because I don't have HD, is, I think it's up to $54.95, starting with the Royal Rumble. Prices are going up. But this will be the first pay-per-view I pay for since WrestleMania last year, and I'm looking forward to it. The Rumble is probably my second favorite show of the year. I was at the 2008 Royal Rumble in Madison Square Garden. I ordered last year's Rumble, which saw Randy Orton win. It was not one of my favorite shows, but I thought it was, a fairly decent Rumble match, if I recall correctly. And I will say that WWE has done a very good job of building up the significance of the Royal Rumble match itself. Because let's be honest here, this is essentially a one-match pay-per-view. There are people who are intrigued by Undertaker Rey Mysterio, but we saw that match already on SmackDown a couple of weeks ago. And I don't know that anybody really expects Mysterio to win the belt. I will not say that it's impossible. They could hotshot the belt onto Rey and have him drop it. I am going to say that that will probably not happen. I would pick Undertaker to go over in this match if I had to predict. Sheamus and Orton is an interesting match in that it's heel versus heel, although I fully expect Orton to be cheered as a babyface in this match. Who wins? I would go with Sheamus. But again, for Orton to win the belt in some sort of a swerve would not shock me. There's no result on this show that would shock me short of, Santino winning the Royal Rumble. And from what I hear, Santino may be out of the Rumble match, either due to injury or because he's selling the effects of an injury sustained from Jack Swagger on Raw Monday night. I believe there's also an ECW championship match between Christian and Ezekiel Jackson. I would be all for Jackson getting the belt. Again, I don't know how much more time is left for ECW. The brand is most certainly going to be redone, if not completely done away with, in the very near future, maybe as soon as just after WrestleMania. But again, I just could care less about ECW. I don't watch the show. The clips I see, I'm not saying the show doesn't have a good wrestling match every now and then and that Christian has not done a commendable job, but it's time for Christian to move on to bigger and better things. He's far more deserving of it. You know, the people who've emailed me saying, well, do you think this is punishment for him going to TNA, that he would be relegated for this long on the ECW brand? I really don't think so. Because if you go back and remember when Christian made his re-debut, originally he was going to be the man revealed as the person who set Jeff Hardy's house on fire and killed his dog and did all these horrible things to him and was going to interfere in the Edge-Jeff Hardy match at the Rumble last year, or the year before, whenever it was. And when rumors began to swirl on the internet, Vince McMahon flipped his lid and said, we have to change the plans. And that's when Matt Hardy went heel and feuded with his brother. And the feud was a little bit better than it was when they first feuded back in 2001. But again, I think we can look back safely on the Jeff Hardy-Matt Hardy feud and say that it was an epic failure. Because again, it went a few months. Then they decided that they were going to go in a different direction. And then when Matt and Jeff patched things up, it just kind of came out of nowhere. And I would look at that angle as a fail. But had Christian been plugged in there, he'd be in a much better position than he's in now. I would love to see him lose the belt just so that he can move on to another brand. Although I'm not sure that would happen until the draft, which I'm hearing may be taking place in April. But that, of course, is subject to change. Now, the Rumble match itself, I've been asked numerous times on Twitter, email, people stopping me on the street, asking me, Solomon Monster, who's going to win the Royal Rumble 2010? Is it going to be a young guy? Come on, the Rumble's a vehicle to put younger people over. And I laugh when they say this because, if you look at the history, okay, you have 23 years worth, or 22, I guess, of history in the Royal Rumble from which to draw information from. The first Royal Rumble, Hacksaw Jim Duggan won. The second Royal Rumble, Big John Studd won. Let's forget those two ever happened. You had Hulk Hogan win the Rumble twice. You had Ric Flair win the Rumble in what is, to this day, my favorite all-time Royal Rumble match. It will never, ever be topped. Because even if there was a Rumble match that came along and, in terms of quality and star power, did in fact match or exceed that one, it's been so long now that, and it had that unique twist of Ric Flair winning the WWF Championship, which was vacant at the time. Just based on nostalgia alone, there will never be a Rumble I look back on quite as fondly as 1992. 93 is really the first example you could look at of a young guy, a new guy, coming in and having the Rumble help propel them to greater heights. And that, of course, would be Yokozuna, who was a young guy at the time, I think in his mid-20s. And mid to late 20s. And, of course, he went on to beat Bret Hart to win the WWF title, albeit for 2 minutes, at WrestleMania 9. 94, you had Bret Hart and Lex Luger, two already established main eventers, co-winning the match. 95 and 96, you had Shawn Michaels, which is the next example of a younger guy that never really had his just due, finally getting it. 97, you had Steve Austin. I would hardly look at Steve Austin winning in 97 as an example of a young up-and-coming guy getting the rub. 98, Austin was already a main eventer, even though he hadn't won the world title yet. 99 was Vince McMahon, need I say more. 2000 was The Rock, even though technically The Big Show won. 2001, Austin won for a third time. Triple H won in 2002. And then you have Brock Lesnar winning in 2003. Even Brock Lesnar, as a young guy, was already an established main eventer. He was already a multiple-time world champion at that point, or at least, actually, I'm sorry, he was only a champion on one occasion at that point, I believe. 2004, you had, of course, Chris Benoit, who went on to win the world title at WrestleMania 20 at Madison Square Garden, but Benoit was already a main event guy. He was in the business for years and was already a WCW champion even. 2005 was Batista. I would say that it's an example of giving somebody else an opportunity, but Batista was already kind of old at that point, to be honest with you. 2006, Rey Mysterio, already established. 2007, The Undertaker. 2008, John Cena. 2009, Randy Orton, who was already a multiple-time world champion. You don't have too many examples of young guys going over in the Rumble match. So this misconception, I mean, people need to take a step back, and yes, it would be interesting, it would be unique, it would be kind of cool if a John Morrison, for example, or a Jack Swagger, or a Kofi Kingston was to come out of nowhere and win the Royal Rumble. But keep this in mind, with the rumored WrestleMania lineup as it stands, and always wanting to load up the WrestleMania card with mega matches, do you really see a guy like Kofi Kingston, or MVP, or Jack Swagger, winning the Rumble and getting a main event title match at WrestleMania 26? There's a reason why random young mid-card guys don't win the Royal Rumble. If it's a younger guy who's never been a world champion before, they already are going to be in a position where they're being pushed and groomed for superstardom. You know, if a guy like Sheamus hadn't already won the world title from John Cena, but was being pushed the way that he has been pushed, I could see Sheamus winning the Rumble. But I don't see Kofi Kingston, for example, winning. I don't see Drew McIntyre or John Morrison winning the Rumble. I just don't see it. So, who do I see winning the Royal Rumble? I like the Rumble this year because it's wide open. They've done a very good job of building up intrigue. Any number of guys could win. Shawn Michaels would seem to be the most likely choice, but to me, because of how likely that choice is, I think it's less likely to happen. I mentioned it on my Twitter page already. If you're not following me on there, you're an idiot. You should already be following me. And if you did, you would know that my vote goes to Triple H. I don't like it. I don't want to see Triple H win the Royal Rumble because Triple H doesn't have to win the Royal Rumble. He's already won before. He's an already established guy, even though Shawn Michaels is certainly already established and doesn't have to win the Rumble, but in the context of the storyline they're doing with him and Undertaker, it makes complete and total sense if Shawn Michaels somehow pulled out a victory in the Royal Rumble and won his third Rumble match. I don't want to see Triple H win, but to me, I can envision a scenario where Shawn Michaels enters at an early number, and it doesn't have to be number one, because he's done that before, and again, it's just so cliche, you know? Have Shawn Michaels enter at number four, or number five. He can still go the distance, and it will be every bit as impressive as if he entered at number one. But, you know, the thing about Triple H, I mean, I could see a scenario where he ends up eliminating Shawn at the end. And, maybe that leads to increased dissension or a breakup of DX. But again, with the rumors of Triple H kind of being the odd man out of the WrestleMania picture and maybe just plugging him into a title match with Sheamus, who of course is one of his chosen stars to groom in the company and his workout buddy. I'm sure they'd love to work together. And Triple H winning the Rumble, you can build intrigue for a couple of weeks even by wondering which title will Triple H choose to compete for. Is he going to once again screw over his friend Shawn Michaels and choose to wrestle The Undertaker, therefore taking Shawn's match with Undertaker away from him, or is he going to choose another champion? And of course, ultimately, he would choose Sheamus instead of The Undertaker, and then you'd have Shawn and Taker Part 2, and you'd have Triple H against Sheamus. So to me, that's the most likely scenario I see happening. I could be completely wrong. I hope I am. I think it's really fun when they have surprises and such in the Rumble. I think they've left a couple of slots open. I've been hearing that perhaps Edge may make his comeback as early as tomorrow night's Royal Rumble match, and he'll be gunning for Chris Jericho. I think that would be cool, but I hope for Edge's sake that he is fully healed from his Achilles tendon tear, because that is an injury you don't want to be fucking around with. If you come back early, if you tear it again, if it's not fully healed, and you put too much pressure on it, you're just inviting trouble. I mean, this is a legit career-ending or career-threatening injury, and I hope that, he's been out since June. If it's going to take another month or two, let him take another month or two. But if he's ready, then by all means, get him in there, and let's see what kind of plans they have for Edge upon his return. I don't know if they'll have another one or two slots open. Like I said, Santino may be out, and from what I'm hearing, Hurricane has been taken out of the Rumble match for obvious reasons. That's another story I'll get to in a second. But there you go. That's the Royal Rumble this Sunday, and it leads into Monday Night Raw this week, William Shatner of Star Trek fame is your guest host. This will be the Shat's second appearance on Raw. His first was back in 1994. He actually appeared on The King's Court with Jerry Lawler to plug his new USA show called Tech Wars. And that was when he gave Jerry Lawler a monkey flip, which Shatner referenced at the Hall of Fame a couple of years ago when he inducted Lawler. Ironically, Bret Hart was on that same show, and he came out to raise William Shatner's hand after he monkey flipped Lawler. And it just so happens that in 2010, here we find ourselves in a position where Jerry Lawler will be on Raw announcing the show, William Shatner will be on Raw guest hosting, and Bret Hart will be on the show. And it's like it's 1994 all over again. Of course, Bret will be on the show, invited once again by Vince McMahon, and who is threatened he will not flinch when he confronts Bret Hart this Monday night. I'm not quite sure what that means. I do think it would be wise to keep the two of them apart physically until a WrestleMania showdown, but they have to do something to really make people excited to see this feud continue. So, fingers crossed. I like the fact they've kept Bret off TV. It builds up intrigue, and I think if Bret's on the show every single week, people are going to get tired of him pretty fast. So I like that they held him out. I would have liked to have seen them promote a Bret Hart appearance at the Royal Rumble, but, you know, Raw the next night is all the better. Maybe they'll pop a nice rating. I guess we'll see. So that is coming up this Monday night. So let's tackle a couple of different stories here. It's been a pretty newsworthy week in the world of wrestling. We'll start with TNA. I made the posting on my Twitter page a couple of days ago that it was pretty much a done deal that TNA Impact would be moving permanently to Monday nights, starting most likely in March. And TNA has not made any official announcements yet. In fact, the initial announcement that they would be doing one more live Monday night special on March 1st was pulled. Now, it wasn't pulled because it's not happening. It's going to happen. It was pulled because the change essentially was announced when a schedule was posted on the Spike TV website that listed Impact on March 1st, and then it got pulled because I guess TNA and Hogan and Bischoff want to be the ones to make the announcement. Fair enough. But there will be an Impact special on Monday night, March 1st. It will be live, and I don't know if it'll be starting immediately the week after, but sometime soon, they're moving Impact to Monday nights. It's they can talk all they want to about how it's not a done deal yet, but it's pretty much a done deal. And I think it's a good move. I think if you're a wrestling fan, it's an exciting time to be a fan. It gives you more choices on a Monday night. Monday night for me is wrestling night. Thursday night, I don't always have the chance to be home and watch Impact. I don't always have the chance to be home on a Friday night, which is the shittiest night of the week for a TV show, and watch SmackDown, for example. And so if Impact is on Monday nights, I know I am more likely to watch the show. I know a lot of other people are more likely to at least sample parts of the show. For what it's worth, Impact actually delivered its biggest normal Thursday audience ever this past Thursday night. It drew a 1.4 rating, did about 1.9 million viewers. That's the good news. The bad news is that looking at the quarter hours for the show, they started, I think, at a 1.5 and dropped all throughout the show, and then it rebounded a bit to a 1.3 at the end. That was a pattern during the Russo era. I mean, Russo is still writing for TNA, but before pre-Hogan Bischoff, it was commonplace for Impact to start at a certain number and then just drop like a rock throughout the show, and that's not a viewing pattern you want for your TV show. So some bad news in the rating, but for the most part, it was still good. I mean, they did, like I said, score a Thursday record, and for the people who think, well, you know, why would they move to Mondays? They just scored a record rating on a Thursday. It's inconsequential. I mean, the rating they drew on that one Monday night special was even larger than that, and they feel that the potential is there to draw even bigger ratings on a Monday night long term than on a Thursday. So I think it's a good move. When the announcement will be made, I don't know, but you can expect that in the very near future, Impact will be airing on Monday nights. The only question is, will it be from 8 to 10, or will it be from 9 to 11? I would say it would be in their best interest initially to do it from 8 to 10 p.m., so they get that 1 hour jump on Raw unopposed. It would work to their advantage. Now, the concern, of course, in many circles, including WWE, is that USA Network is going to come to Vince McMahon and say, look, we want Raw to go 3 hours every single Monday night. They've already gone to WWE months ago, and they wanted Raw to be 3 hours every week because it'll just it'll be to USA Network's benefit in terms of the ratings they bring in. WWE has fought tooth and nail against that idea. I mean, Vince McMahon is on record in the past as saying that he doesn't even think 2 hours is a good time for a wrestling show. He thinks 90 minutes is ideal. And I actually agree with that. And going to 3 hours is one of the many things, the many, 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 many things that did WCW Nitro in back during the Monday Night Wars. Imagine how much worse it would be now, not just with all the goofy comedy writing that WWE has, and they would feel the need to fill 3 hours with skits every week, but you have the roster split. The Raw brand itself is fairly thin. It's the same guys all the time, and if you have an extra hour every single week, I don't see how that's going to work. You're going to have more guys on the brand and the split, which of course is not going to happen because they're committed to it. Raw going to 3 hours every week would be a disaster, in my opinion. It's not something WWE wants, but ultimately it would be USA Network's call. So, you know, Impact moving to Mondays may have a much greater effect on the wrestling industry than people think. Now, I mentioned Atlanta a couple of minutes ago, and a bit of breaking news here. And I believe the announcement will formally be made this Monday. But basically, the news is that WrestleMania 27, emanating in 2011, it came down to two sites for WrestleMania, Atlanta, Georgia, and Miami, Florida. And the decision has been made that WrestleMania 27 will emanate from the Georgia Dome in Atlanta. I believe a press conference has been set for noon on Monday to make the official announcement. And so there you go. Atlanta will be getting their very first WrestleMania, which I think is great. I mean, it wasn't that long ago. It was literally 2 years ago that they were in Florida. Granted, that was Orlando for WrestleMania. Never been to Atlanta. And Atlanta, of course, was the former home of WCW, World Championship Wrestling. It's been a haven for wrestling going back decades. A wrestling-rich city, just like St. Louis, which has also, coincidentally, never gotten a WrestleMania. And so I think it's good. I think the Georgia Dome can seat upwards of 50,000 people, which is a little bit less than we're accustomed to seeing at WrestleMania. The last couple of years, you've had 60, 70, 80,000 people. Believe me, 50,000 people is perfectly fine, you'll have, I'm sure, have them packed in like sardines. But there you go, WrestleMania 27 emanating from Atlanta, GA, and as long as WrestleMania 30 emanates from Madison Square Garden, all will be right with the world, and my hope would be that at that time, I guess that would be, 2014, perhaps the Solo Monster can attend his first WrestleMania show. We'll see. Two news bits here regarding Ring of Honor. Davey Richards has re-signed with Ring of Honor and has been dropped from any and all future bookings with Dragon Gate USA and the new Evolve promotion run by former Ring of Honor booker Gabe Sapolsky. This is kind of shocking. I don't have all the details yet. I just read about this morning. Excuse me, from Mike Johnson at PW Insider, who is on top of all those stories as it relates to those promotions. And it's shocking to me because Davey Richards has done interviews before, and he's talked very openly about the fact that if Ring of Honor doesn't like the fact that he wrestles for these other promotions, then that's too bad. He's an independent contractor. He can do whatever he wants. A lot of people thought he was on his way out of Ring of Honor, and instead the opposite has happened. He has re-signed with them, and something went down here that I don't think has been revealed yet, but I'm sure it will be in the coming weeks. So as soon as I know more on that, I'll be sure to talk about that. But the other big Ring of Honor story, which is interesting, although completely unsurprising, is that Ring of Honor has sued Ric Flair. They filed a lawsuit against Flair on Thursday, alleging that he owes the company over $40,000. It stems, of course, from Flair failing to live up to his contracted obligations as the Ring of Honor ambassador on their TV show and their live events last year. The lawsuit alleges that Flair was originally signed to make 5 appearances at house shows for $10,000 per appearance. Not a bad gig. He failed to appear at a scheduled Ring of Honor event in Montreal in July and has to date failed to return his $10,000 payment for that event. It also alleges that Flair only attended one Ring of Honor taping for HDNet after coming to terms with them to appear as their authority figure, who of course is now Jim Cornette. Flair appeared at one taping And the next set made a brief announcement to the live crowd that he was resigning his post due to his relationship with WWE at the time. And the lawsuit notes that Flair was paid $35,000 for the TV appearances and only made one. So, there you go. Not a good situation. And I've heard a lot of stories similar. I mean, Ric Flair has a lot of lawsuits pending against him from different people he's fucked over in the last year or two. I love Flair. He's a legend in the business. It's sad to see what he has become in terms of him not living up to his commitments, really coming off as somebody who's just in it for the money. And I get the fact that he's got alimony to pay three different wives. But you know what? That's your problem. If you make a commitment, if you sign a contract, it's your obligation to live up to it. Flair has not done that now in multiple cases. High spots, of course. We all know the controversy there. Flair actually put up his original NWA title belt as collateral for a deal he signed with High Spots. He fucked them over, supposedly. And now the belt, this artifact of wrestling history, is now held up in some legal dispute, and it may be put up for auction at some point to the highest bidder. I mean, just stories like this, again, just make you shake your head. Flair now, of course, is in TNA. He could do whatever he wants. He's a grown man, but when Flair lost that match to Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania, he should have stayed retired. He got the best send-off any wrestler could ever ask for, and he's done nothing but embarrass himself since then, and it really is just a damn shame. Another big story from the week, kind of embarrassing for WWE, although from the sounds of it now, blown way out of proportion, were the arrests in Kentucky of Chris Jericho and Hurricane Helms, who apparently were arrested at a gas station after some sort of confrontation in a taxi cab. It's alleged that Helms may have punched a woman or elbowed a woman in the face. Matt Hardy was somehow involved in that he was present, although he was sober, and ended up running away and disappearing into the night. I could just picture Matt Hardy just running away with his hair whipping in the wind. Apparently, it sounded a lot worse when the news originally was broken, and it's still a, you know, an embarrassing situation all around. You know, their mugshots are online. It's just bad PR for the company. And as I mentioned, Helms has been removed from the Royal Rumble match, I'm sure, as punishment for his involvement. Jericho, of course, is still involved. To me, without having all the details and not having been there myself, but now we know a little bit more that they were apparently play fighting in the back of the cab, and the cab driver thought it was real and called the cops, and this other person, this woman, was inadvertently nailed. Even she says now the whole thing was kind of blown out of proportion. It wasn't like she was, you know, struck with a backhand across the face or something like that. To me, it makes this a non-story. I'm sure WWE will just deal with this on their own. They have to go back to court. They were charged with, I think, public intoxication, which is hilarious. Anybody who goes out and hangs out with their friends, you see a lot of people publicly intoxicated. It doesn't really mean much to me. I was just intoxicated in public last night myself, and I don't have to go spend any time in jail. Maybe I should. That'd make for a hell of a podcast if I ever did. But, you know, again, Helms has a history. People who know him, he's part of that whole group with Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy and Shannon Moore, and those guys were always drinking and having a good time. And it's hard for me to knock the guy because I do that with my own friends, and I don't think that makes me a bad person. But when you do work for a publicly traded company and you end up getting arrested with your mugshot plastered all over TMZ.com, that's a problem. I don't think it's punishable. I guess WWE can do whatever they want. You know, they may well end up releasing Helms, or maybe he'll go to TNA. I don't know that they're going to do that, though. Helms is certainly lower on the totem pole than a guy like Chris Jericho, but he's still a veteran who's been with the company for a long time, and I think he's well-liked by most of the people there, so I don't know that anybody's going to get fired over this. I think it's just much ado about nothing. It'll blow over. If anything, it's gotten WWE some publicity on TMZ all week. TMZ cameras were following Randy Orton around an airport. Orton, of course, claimed he knew nothing of the arrests and was I don't know if Orton was just being Orton or if he was in character. Some people say Orton lives the character. He, you know, he didn't lash out or anything like that, but you could tell he was not happy being hounded by cameras in the airport. So anyway, I think this is a non-story. It'll blow over. It's not that big of a deal. And you know, the one thing is they were drunk. They were having a good time. I at first heard that they were arrested drunk at a gas station and thought, what a bunch of fucking morons, because obviously that means you would deduce from that they were driving while drunk. And we find out that they at least have the sense to take a cab, and so you know what? To me, it's a non-story. I don't care. And I want to talk here for a second about the Honky Tonk Man, the greatest Intercontinental Champion of all time. Just ask him. He'll tell you. I mentioned earlier, Hogan, Bischoff, TNA. Hogan and Bischoff actually had this State of TNA address on the Bubba the Love Sponge radio show, I think it was yesterday, Friday. And they were asked about these rumors about Honky Tonk Man potentially coming to TNA. It was news that was actually posted on Honky Tonk Man's website that he was negotiating and perhaps on his way into TNA, and some people called bullshit. He was just trying to stir traffic on, to his website. And when he was asked about it, Eric Bischoff was pretty direct in how he felt about the Honky Tonk Man, saying that he couldn't draw flies if you rolled him up in bullshit or something like that. And Hogan also didn't have very kind things to say about Roy Wayne Ferris, or Farris, as his real name is. So it sounds to me like Honky Tonk Man is not coming to TNA, although I guess you never know, they could be working us. But beyond that, Honky was in the news because he has declined an invitation from WWE and John Laurinaitis to be a part of the 2010 Hall of Fame class for World Wrestling Entertainment. And when you find out the reasons why, I can understand it. I mean, in one respect, it's, why wouldn't you want to be a part of the WWE Hall of Fame? I mean, it's so prestigious, and you get a spiffy little ring on your finger. And for somebody like Honky Tonk Man, who still works independent shows every single week, it can only help his bottom line by being able to plug and promote himself as WWE Hall of Famer, because people go apeshit over stuff like that. So, in that respect, it's like, why would he turn it down? WrestleMania is in his backyard. He lives in Arizona. Why wouldn't you want to be a part of that? Honky was at the Hall of Fame last year, had a great time. He inducted Coco Beware. And then Honky went on his website and talked about the fact that they were offering $5,000, which sounds about right as far as what they've offered other legends in the past. But also that there's a non-compete attached to it. He wouldn't be able to wrestle independent shows or do much of anything for about 6 to 8 months after the Hall of Fame. Mind you, he's only being paid $5,000, which isn't that much money, especially if you can't really do anything else for the next 6 months. I think that's bullshit. And I don't, if that's the case, I applaud Honky for having the common sense to say, you know what, fuck you. I do my own thing. I make a lot more money than what you're offering me. This is an insult, especially when WWE supposedly paid Pete Rose upwards of $300,000 just to appear at their Hall of Fame and get inducted a couple of years ago. It's a joke. Honky posted a series of alleged emails that he sent to John Laurinaitis. He's a little bit bitter about his experience for WrestleMania last year. His valet parking was never, paid for, and they wouldn't let him into the building. They didn't know who he was. It was just a whole kind of a comedy of errors in many ways. And Honky Tonk Man's not very happy, but he's also not going into the Hall of Fame, so you could scratch that name off the list for this year. We know Stu Hart is going in. Many people believe that the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, is likely going to go in. Beyond that, I've heard rumors that maybe Dr. Death, who just passed away recently, may be inducted posthumously. I don't know if they want to put too many deceased people in one class, although right now it would just be him and Stu, but none of that is confirmed at this point. We'll just have to wait and see. All right, so let's break into the mailbag here. I think I've done a pretty good job, by the way, of answering many questions directly, even though there was no show last week. So if I missed your question, I either thought it was not worthy of an answer, maybe it was just a comment, or I may have just missed it, so I apologize. But had a couple of good letters. I mentioned Edge earlier and his injury and making sure he doesn't come back too early from it. I got a pretty informative email here from a fan. Hey, Solo Monster. Love the show. His sister asked about Edge, and he told her about his injury, and she actually provided him with some interesting facts about Achilles tendon injuries. His sister is a doctor, and the Achilles tendon is the strongest tendon in the leg. There are three ways a rupture may occur. Number one, cut the tendon with a knife or any penetrating trauma to that area. Number two, steroid use, which weakens ligaments in the tendons, or rather weakens ligaments and tendons, and can lead to rupture. And number three, the drug Cipro, which is an antibiotic, is believed to cause Achilles tendon rupture. Ironically, I think Cipro is what was being given out at the height of the the anthrax craze when everybody was, this was years ago, after 9/11, when people were being mailed anthrax spores, and there was like a big run on Cipro as a drug that would help, you know, kind of protect yourself from an attack. I wasn't aware, actually, that that drug could cause Achilles tendon rupture, but apparently it can. As I told young Yusef here, it's a pretty devastating injury. I mean, and it can happen on the freakish of, I mean, just the freakiest of things. The way it happened with Edge, he was at a house show facing Jeff Hardy. It was the beginning of the match. He did a leapfrog is what he did. He just leapt up, and when he landed wrong and tore the tendon. And before you know it, he's out almost a year. It really has ended careers of professional athletes. Football players have returned at half speed. In wrestling, I don't think it really matters so much because Edge, it doesn't have to be fast. You know, if Edge loses a step or two on his speed as a pro wrestler, it doesn't matter. If he was a football player, yes, it would matter. If he was a baseball player, yes, it would matter. So I don't think that's going to affect him as much, although he definitely will not be as fast as he used to be. What's interesting here, though, and I mentioned this in my email to him, is that The Rock actually suffered this injury while filming his movie The Game Plan a couple of years ago. And to this day, he still has issues with the injury. A lot of people don't realize that. I mean, Rock was very lucky in that he went through a wrestling career. It wasn't the longest. It wasn't a Ric Flair or Jerry Lawler-esque 30-plus year wrestling career. But still, Rock was in the wrestling business, you know, for a pretty solid 6, 7, 8 years on top, for the most part, and never really suffered what I would call a serious injury. Early on in his WWF run, when he was still the babyface, smiling Rocky Maivia, he suffered a knee injury. He was out for a few months, and when he came back, that's when he turned heel and joined the Nation. After that, I don't have any recollection of Rock suffering anything even remotely resembling a severe injury that kept him out for months on end. So he was very lucky in that respect. And it's kind of ironic that it wasn't until he started filming movies that he was on the set and suffered the Achilles tendon rupture. But what I'm wondering is every time we hear Rock come out, and we're hearing it more and more often that The Rock wants to come back, he's going to do something with WWE, likely in the summer. He may guest host Raw, but he wants to do more than just guest host. But he doesn't see himself wrestling a match. Now, it doesn't mean that Rock will never wrestle a match again. He hasn't closed the door completely. In other interviews, he said that he's not really expecting it, but you never say never. I wonder, and I have no inside knowledge of this at all, but I wonder, because I have heard that he still has issues with that injury. I mean, he's talked about the fact that on his most recent movie, The Tooth Fairy, all the scenes in the movie of him skating, ice skating, was not him. He had somebody fill in for him, a double, and do all the skating in the movie because he either couldn't learn or he didn't want to learn, which is interesting because Rock is one of those guys that usually takes a challenge head on. That, you know, ice skating for The Rock, I mean, he could pick that up in a couple of weeks. But think about ice skating. You're basically standing on a blade. It cannot be very comfortable, especially for somebody who has suffered an injury like that. And I'm wondering if The Rock's reluctance to wrestle a match has more to do with the fact that he doesn't feel he's completely recovered from that injury and would not want to do anything to aggravate that. I just wonder if that plays a role in his thought process or not whenever he, you know, declines to wrestle a match. Maybe he would love to wrestle one more match but feels he can't. I just, you know, I wonder about that sometimes. Brian from upstate New York writes in, "Dear Solo Monster, I was watching the MSG Empire State of Mind music video, and now I'm 50-50 on this. You were there, so maybe you noticed. Do you think Triple H knew that John Cena was number 30 in the 2008 Royal Rumble match? Now, I say I'm 50-50 on this because Cena does point to him and mouths, 'You and me,' pointing to Triple H. Now, is it possible that Vince may have said, 'You're losing to number 30 tonight,' and not have told him who it was going to be? I wonder this because there was no leaks or spoilers or anything to give a hint or give it away at all." He knew. Triple H definitely knew. And there's a variety of reasons for it. Triple H sits in on many, if not all, of the production meetings. And I suppose it's possible that when they went over the Rumble, even Vince didn't bring up the name John Cena in those meetings because he was worried about it leaking, but Triple H is on the inside. I mean, Triple H is basically, he's part of the family. Triple H would not have been kept in the dark on something like that, and Vince cannot, and probably should not at all be concerned about Triple H leaking anything, because who's Triple H going to leak to? You think Triple H is friends with Dave Meltzer or Wade Keller? Triple H despises the so-called dirt sheets and the internet wrestling websites. He is the staunchest advocate against them. He very rarely, if ever, gives interviews. He never gives interviews with them. If anything, it's a website of another sort or some other publication every now and then. Triple H is the last person Vince McMahon needs to be worried about in that company leaking information. So he definitely knew, and Triple H was one of the few who knew. But he most definitely knew that Cena was coming out at number 30. You know, especially because they had to have gone over in advance the spots that they wanted to work into the finish of that match. I mean, they were the last two guys in the ring, and not just, you know, in the last 2 minutes. They were the last two, and they were in there going at it for a good 10 minutes, or close to it, before ultimately Cena dumped Triple H over the top rope. So, you know, not a stupid question. I know what, you know, some people might think, oh, he asked that kind of question. But, you know, it's a valid question to ask. But, yes, Triple H did know. Ash writes in, do you know what WWE is planning on doing with all the fans CM Punk saves on SmackDown and on house shows? Well, they're going to round them all up, put them on a bus, and send them to the Impact Zone in Orlando. No, I'm kidding, of course. Serena, by the way, the woman that CM Punk shaved last week on SmackDown in what was a very, I don't know, somewhat disturbing angle, I did watch that, is Serena Deeb, who is a female wrestler who is a lot braver than I would be agreeing to get her head shaved. She will be part of that Straight Edge Society act from here on out, but everybody else who's getting their head shaved, at least up to this point, it's just a one-off thing. They're not going to be on TV every week. There's been some rumors that maybe Bryan Danielson, who should be making his WWE debut any week now, may have some sort of involvement in that storyline. I don't know if that's going to happen or not, but we'll see. But for those that have asked, that is the situation with Serena. She is going to be part of this act from here on out. And, you know, I find it all very intriguing. Punk has done a phenomenal job. He's really come into his own as this very Raven-esque, cultish, you know, bearded man who I'm sure will get his comeuppance at WrestleMania. There's been talk of maybe him doing a mask versus hair match against Rey Mysterio. We'll see if that pans out. So I'm really digging Punk and his Straight Edge army, because even though he's not world champion anymore, Punk is a top guy, and the cream will always rise to the top. And even though the Straight Edge Society is not a main event act yet, he's doing a phenomenal job with it. He is one of the top stars on that brand. And I think will be for some time to come. Another letter here. What is the definition of politicking in wrestling? I think I know, but I'd like a proper definition. Is it like the segment with Ozzy, where Triple H literally just whispered in his ear, or is it something else? I don't think that has anything to do with it at all. I think there is no proper definition. I'm not the Webster's Dictionary of Professional Wrestling, but what I will tell you, it should be quite obvious, politicking and wrestling. People lobbying for themselves, people lobbying for their spot, people lobbying to fuck with other people's spots. Triple H is one of the master politicians in WWE just based on his influence behind the scenes. So for example, go back to a classic example, 2002, Triple H defending the World Heavyweight Championship against Rob Van Dam at Unforgiven. Rob Van Dam was, and he's even admitted to this, Rob Van Dam was supposed to win the world title at that pay-per-view. For how long he would have held it, who knows? Would he have been a success? Who knows? Triple H politicked his way into winning the match. Why? Because he felt, whether he believed this or not, that Rob wasn't ready. He wasn't world champion material. It didn't feel right. He politicked himself into a victory in that match. Certain people will politic their way into main events. Certain people will politic other people out of their spot because, you know, they start talking shit backstage about them, even if it's not true. All of those things would fall under the realm of politicking. Hulk Hogan is perhaps one of the greatest politicians in the history of the business. He's so full of shit, I think he believes half the stuff he says. If you tell a lie enough times, you start to believe it. That's what politicking is. What do you think of HBK ironically getting out-politicked by Hogan prior to SummerSlam 2005 and his spastic selling that he did during the match as a result. It was entertaining. I did think it was unprofessional on some level. It was certainly unprofessional what he said the next night on Raw. He had a couple of shots at Hogan because he was upset that Hulk Hogan, who had 100% creative control over his character at that time in WWE, refused to job and backed out of what was a proposed rematch that would have taken place at Unforgiven the next month between the two of them in a steel cage. So one would have gotten one victory and the other guy would have gotten another, and obviously that never happened. So Sean threw a fit on TV. But as far as his selling during the match, there's videos on YouTube set to the Benny Hill music that are just hilarious of him selling. It was entertaining as hell. I laugh at it when I look back on that. As far as him getting out-politicked by Hogan, it's par for the course, you know? I mean, Shawn Michaels, maybe more so back in his day, when he was younger and less mature than he is now, he pulled shit like that all the time. In fact, you might even say that Shawn Michaels was more egregious about it than Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan, at least, even though it made no sense for business, was jobbing left and right in 2000 in WCW to Billy fucking Kidman, of all people, you know? Shawn Michaels in 1997 went on record as saying, I don't want to lay down for anybody. I will not job to anybody in the territory, in the company. It's not going to, going to happen. And we all know what role that played in the events that led to the Montreal Screwjob. I don't really want to get into that all over again, but to turn around and say that you're not going to lay down for anybody is the utmost of disrespect. You know, it's funny to hear Shawn Michaels. It was, for the most part, a worked promo, but still, when Shawn went face-to-face with Bret Hart on January 4th on Raw, to hear him say that what happened to Bret in Montreal, you deserved it because you disrespected me and you disrespected this business, it makes me laugh, because Shawn Michaels was so much more guilty of that back in 1997 than Bret Hart ever was. So Shawn Michaels getting out-politicked by Hulk Hogan, it's like a chess match, you know? There's going to be a winner. There's going to be a loser. Shawn Michaels knows the game. He's played that game before to his advantage. He's, you know, made other people's lives miserable because of it, both, you know, in the office and some of the other boys and, you know, the clique back in the mid-90s. And so, you know what? What goes around comes around. I don't have any problem with it at all. Good for Hogan that he won out in that battle of the egos, as far as I'm concerned. Dear Solo Monster, WCW most likely trademarked their match concepts such as War Games. WWE must have picked up those trademarks when they purchased the company. How long do those trademarks last, and would it be a good idea for another promotion to pick them up and use them? I don't know how long the trademarks are for, but WWE owns them, and they're not letting them go. There will never be another promotion that will own the War Games trademark unless WWE actively goes ahead and just sells them and gives them away. That's not going to happen. And Vince just is not big on the War Games concept. There are people, including Triple H, who have pitched it to him over the years. He just doesn't want to have it. He doesn't want to hear it. He doesn't want to have anything to do with it. I guess it wasn't his creation. It wasn't his baby. And so therefore, you know, we have the Elimination Chamber, for example. So that's the situation as far as those, trademarks are concerned. Let's see here. A couple of other questions. One person wrote in, I was recently listening to an older episode, Sound Off 85, and you said that you heard a couple of months ago, around September, that WWE may be getting some new championship belts. Just wondering if you had heard anything new on that. I have not, actually. And I'm glad you brought that up, because I'm going to have to look into that. But I have not heard anything about that. That was the rumor at the time. Not just that the spinner belt, which doesn't really spin anymore, but many, if not all, of the WWE title belts were going to get some sort of overhaul. Obviously, that didn't happen. So I don't know what happened. I don't know if they're waiting until after WrestleMania, like they did back in 98. Remember, Austin won the Winged Eagle, and then the next night we had a new world title belt and a new intercontinental belt, and I don't know. Maybe they changed their minds. Maybe they got designs that Vince didn't like, but it was reported in more than one place from pretty reputable sources at the time, which is why I talked about it on the Sound Off, but obviously it has not happened, and I don't have an answer for you. I don't know. got a couple of letters asking me my thoughts on the new TNA product, and more specifically on their Montreal Screwjob rehash last week. I will say this, TNA ratings have crept up a little bit, and the shows are still not perfect. You still have Vince Russo writing for you, but they're definitely more focused than they were before. You know, when Impact ends on a Thursday night, and I hear this from other people too, you actually remember what you just watched. It's not a situation where you have so much shit being thrown at you from all ends that you can't even remember it at the end of the show. That's a good thing, that we're moving away from that. Now, as far as the Montreal Screwjob finish, we'll see where they go with it, but I will say this. And I said this in an email to somebody, and I think it's worth repeating here, that, you know, this company gets laid more than every man in America put together. I mean, how many times do you think that this company has fucked themselves? This would be one of those times. WWE Lite is a great expression for how to really look at TNA sometimes. They've got so many talented guys. They're going, I think, in the right direction. But when you just blatantly rip off, and it's bad enough that we've seen the Screwjob finish so many times in WWE alone over the years. It serves no purpose. Nobody believed that what they were watching on Thursday night was real. That was the point, by the way. Oh, Solid Monster was just a wrestling angle. No, they did it because they wanted to convince people that, holy shit, Kurt Angle's pissed. He might go to WWE. Nobody believed that Kurt Angle was going to WWE because of what happened on Thursday night. Nobody believed it. If you did, I weep for you. Because we've seen this before. The Screwjob worked in 97 because it was real. And because nobody knew what the fuck was going on. They've never seen anything like that before. At least not on such a grand scale on pay-per-view like that. And there are still people who thought it was a work. I mean, to this day there are people who think it was a work. Which, again, just makes me shake my head, but that's why that quote-unquote worked, for lack of a better term. This was just stupid. I'm sorry, but it was just stupid. I didn't like that. And Ronald McDonald writes in, hey, Solid Monster, have you heard anything from Hulk Hogan about being a double agent for WWE? People are starting to say that he is there to ruin TNA and drive down the price so that Vince McMahon can buy it. These people wouldn't happen to be friends of Rob Van Dam, would they? Just saying. Maybe they live on the West Coast. Medical marijuana laws are a little less lax over there. Anyway, you know what this reminds me of? When Vince Russo went to WCW in the late 90s, people were convinced, after just a couple of months on the job, that Russo had to be working for Vince McMahon still. That he was sent there almost as an assassin to just make WCW television as shitty as he possibly could, and the company would ultimately die a horrible death. Ironically, that's exactly what happened, but no. Vince Russo did not go to WCW because Vince McMahon sent him there, much the same way that Hulk Hogan is on, you know, he's representing WCW on his own. He is not working for Vince McMahon. He's on WWE's shit list right now. He's not a double agent. These people need to stop watching the Bourne Identity and 007 movies and get into the real world, because it's just not true. I do chuckle when I get those emails, though. But no, it is not true. Alright, last question here, dear Solid Monster. You do know that the WWE's Raw theme song by Nickelback is called Burn It to the Ground. And it has the lyrics, quote, "Well, it's midnight, damn right, we're wound up too tight. I've got a fistful of whiskey, the bottle just bit me. Oh, that shit makes me batshit crazy. We've got no fear, no doubt, all in, balls out." How is that PG, and how do you spell hypocrite, VKM, for Vincent Kennedy McMahon? Well, it really is nothing new. I mean, it's a recurring theme with most of the songs they choose for Raw, having adult-themed lyrics that they need to edit. I think the previous song by Papa Roach, the I Just Want to Be Loved theme song, actually had a lyric that had the words, "fucking neck, I want to break your fucking neck." It's just, I don't know. I don't know what the logic is behind that. I mean, why does Mark Henry still walk out on TV every week with theme music that talks about breaking necks and somebody's going to get their ass kicked, or somebody's going to get their ass whipped? because you don't hear that language used much in WWE at all anymore, let alone in someone's theme song. So, you know, you can find examples where it's kind of hypocritical, but I will say this for the record, I love the new Raw theme. I know there's people out there who despise Nickelback. I'm not a big Nickelback fan. I just think the Raw song is awesome. It fits perfectly. It's got a great beat. It's 15 million times better than that piece of shit song they were using before. So I love the Raw theme, and I actually like the SmackDown theme a lot too. Divide the Day song, Let It Roll. I think TNA missed the boat by not using that song. There's a lyric in there that talks about, crossing the line. That would have been a phenomenal song to use for Impact. So for the first time, maybe ever, I actually love the Raw theme and the SmackDown theme at the same time. I don't think that's ever happened before. I mean, the original SmackDown music, which was just instrumental, I thought was really cool. There was a SmackDown theme that was short-lived that was used back in 2003 that had this really, really cool beat to it. I love that version of the theme, too. But, yeah, I love both songs. Speaking of songs, for the record, WWE released Volume 10, their latest musical installment from Jim Johnston, as an Amazon MP3 exclusive. It was on sale, at least on Thursday it was, for $3.99. You can get the whole album. It's like 14 songs. I figured, why not? That's a pretty good deal. So I got the album, and they have the new Bret Hart theme song on there. It's called Return the Hitman. I don't know why it's not Return of the Hitman. It just says Return the Hitman, so okay. And I think it's the sort of thing I can get used to. I mean, I still love his old theme song. I mean, I still love his old theme song from the 80s, the Hart Foundation theme. But, you know, it's at the end of the day, it's not a big deal. I mean, it sounds close enough to the original theme that it's not that big of a deal. I mean, I just said it was a big deal that first night because people were expecting his regular theme music. And I think when they heard a theme that wasn't his, it rattled some people a little bit. And I thought maybe the pop suffered because of it, even though we still got a monstrous pop in Ohio that night. But I listened to the song. It's long. It's over 5 minutes, 30 seconds long. And it pretty much just loops the same beat over and over again with some different guitar riffs in there. It's a little different than the theme he used his first night on Raw. I thought the guitar riffs that first night were a lot more pronounced, and I actually like the way the music sounded on Raw that first night better than it does on the album. It's a little bit different if you listen close enough, but that's still it's my favorite song from the album. The Miz's new theme song is on there. I think that's pretty cool too. Evan Bourne's theme music is another one. The Jericho theme, which is awesome. The Legacy A New Day theme is on there. They have some other ones that I don't really care as much for. Tiffany's new theme. I don't give a shit about Tiffany's music. There's a song on there by Kim Swazi, who some of you may know. I don't know that it's anybody's theme music. I mean, I don't think it's identified with anybody. It's just sort of on there. Who else is on here? I don't have the track listing in front of me. Dolph Ziggler. I Am Perfection. That's on there, too. So, you know, for $3.99, I mean, if you're a fan of any of the theme songs for the WWE stars, I mean, it's worth it. You know, it's better than going into a store in the old days and spending $17 on a CD when you only like half the songs. I mean, you just, $3.99, you click, you download them, and boom. You can put them on your iPod, your BlackBerry, and just listen to them and... It's my experience there with Volume 10. So, it's time to crank the volume down on this podcast. You like that segue, right? Crank the volume. Anyway, we're going to call it quits for this week. TheSolemonster@gmail.com is the email address. As always, it has not changed in over 2 years, so you can reach me there. Reach me on Twitter, twitter.com/Solemonster. You can leave me replies there as well. You're better off emailing questions to me, but now that I remember, somebody did leave me a question on Twitter, asking my thoughts on the rumored TNA rankings. I guess Eric Bischoff has been doing some interviews and has talked about using some sort of ranking system, which, as my follower pointed out, is an idea that I myself floated in the sound off here many, many weeks back. I don't remember what episode it was, but I've actually talked multiple times about why I think WWE should implement some sort of power ranking system in terms of a top 10 for the world title and a top 5 for every other belt. If TNA is going to do anything even remotely resembling that, which I am skeptical of, especially with Vince Russo writing, that would be cool. I think it would be a plus, so we'll see if they actually do it or not. Right now it's all talk and no action, so talk is cheap, as they say. I guess I shouldn't say that, because all I do here on the podcast every week is talk, and I don't think it's cheap. twitter.com/Solomonster. You can follow me on there. And, of course, you can also download the podcast through the iTunes Music Store. It is a store, but it is free. It doesn't cost you anything. So you can subscribe, and every time there's a new show, it'll automatically download. It's really cool. Technology 2010. So that's going to do it. Sound Off 98 in the books. Hopefully we'll have episode 99 next week as we creep ever so closer to episode 100. There'll be a new logo for the show, which you can already see on my Twitter page, and I'll start putting that, I'll start embedding that with the podcasts with episode 100, replacing the old logo. I've done some work, so I've been going through some of the old episodes. I just have not had the time to really put anything together. I figured maybe I could piece together some sort of little montage with clips to play at the top of the show. We'll probably do a live show for episode 100. I'm not sure when. It would probably be a Saturday afternoon, just because I don't know that if I promote a show, let's say a week in advance for any other day, you know, if something comes up, I may have to cancel. I think Saturday afternoon would be a safe bet what day it would be. Probably not until mid to late February, I think, is what we're aiming for. Whenever the 100th episode would be scheduled for. And, you know, try to get, you know, at least one person maybe on the air with me. I think you can, take a few guesses who that might be. We'll take live calls. In many ways, it'll be just like one of the old SE Scoops live episodes, that we used to do and that we may be doing more of in the future. The only drawback to that, you know, going through Blog Talk Radio, the quality is not going to be, you know, what you're hearing now is what I would call, it's good quality, this podcast. And if you listen to any of the old live shows, you'd hear me, it would sound like I was on a phone, which I was many times. And I think the quality would probably be much like that. So that would be one of the only drawbacks. I still think it would be cool to do a live show as a 100th episode. So even so, if I can't use my mic, you know, we still may do it that way, but we'll see. We still have a few weeks to worry about that. And we'll get through 99 before we get to 100. That's usually how it works. 99 comes before 100. So that's going to do it. If you're watching Strike Force tonight, Royal Rumble tomorrow night on pay-per-view, which I think is going to be a good show, I think it's going to do well. I think the hype this year was much better than last year. And it's a one-match show, but it's a big one. It only comes once a year, so if you check out the Rumble, enjoy it. Enjoy Bret Hart's return to Raw this Monday night. And we will see you right back here next week. Take it easy, guys.
You've been listening to The Solomonster.
You know, I really just don't understand what they're doing.
Anybody agree with me out there?
I mean, anybody. Come on, throw me a bone here.
Probably the single dumbest thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
God, I love this business.
On SE Scoop.